Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Hey, good day, America. It's Pirate Money Radio, and we're talking money and pirates, but maybe not in the way you're thinking. What I'm about to share with you is so startling that when I first did a deep dive research on it, I couldn't believe it, and then it turns out it's true. I want you to know that in court filing that was just in January, the filing was in December, reported in January, the United States Justice Department took the position that you don't own your own money. Wait, let me say that again. According to the Justice Department filing, the money you have in your wallet, that's not yours. In fact, they claim it's the property of the United States government, and that gives them the right to take it from you at will, even without traditional due process. Now, the reasoning is ridiculous, but it's all there in black and white. And I want to tell you, to me, that makes them pirates. And if that's true, what can you do to protect yourself? We're going to get into all of that and offer a solution. But first, let me welcome co-host, my good friend, the amazing Mike Carter, back to the Pirate Money Radio.
Good to be back. And, I was up north, super cold up there, but I'm not sure it was as cold as the chill I just got with that opening statement you just said. The money I own, I no longer own.
It's not yours. It's because money's not property. We'll get into all of that. But did you take some money with you when you were traveling?
Oh, yeah. I always make sure I have a little bit of cash with me. It makes me feel comfortable still. Everybody else is all electronics, but I got my cash just in case.
Now, what if I told you while we're out celebrating the holidays during the waning days of the Biden administration, our federal government files a court brief that essentially said that the money that you were carrying with you is not property, and therefore the government has a right to take it from you at will?
You know, I knew that once I put my money in the bank, that was the reality, that it becomes kind of their money, right? And I'm just able to exchange and to use that. But now you're saying this is money that I have in my pocket is not mine.
Yeah, in your shoebox, under the bed, in the mattress, whatever. But money is, well, we're going to get into all of it. This comes from a case where the Department of Labor went in and they studied a landscape, right? And let's see what it is. It's landscaper. And we'll get into that. But landscaper basically said, hey, I want to have my day in court. And they said, you get it. We've decided that this is what we're doing and your day in court's over. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw part of the review the other day, and it wasn't about a money issue even. It was about him having employees and living in an apartment that wasn't zoned correctly, and they went after his money.
Yeah, they just took the money for him. You know, you made this point earlier, though. You said you realize that the money in your bank account is technically not yours. Now, most people don't realize that, but I pulled up SGR Law, Smith, Gambrell, and Russell website law. It's a New York-based law firm. And they have an article that says, does the money in your bank account really belong to you? And any of you can go do a Google search or a web search of any kind and just say, does the money in your bank account belong to you? And you'll find a series of these law firms telling you essentially the balance in your checking or savings account does not belong to you. You're surprised to learn here from their article that the funds in a general bank account do not technically belong to the depositor. At the moment of deposit, the funds become the property of the depository bank. Thus, as a depositor, you're in essence a creditor of the bank, and once the bank accepts your deposit, it agrees to refund the same amount or any part thereof on demand. That's a demand deposit. So, do you remember what they did with Silicon Valley Bank?
Well, I remember that they protected everybody at Silicon Valley Bank, even the big depositors from the FDIC.
Yeah, now that's the key point. While it's true that the money, that it's not your money in the bank, it's just an IOU, the good news is the government has stepped in through the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and guaranteed that you're going to get your demand deposit back up to $250,000. In the case of Silicon Valley Bank, when it failed, they gave everybody all of their money. They created it to give it to them, essentially, but everybody got their money. But that's not what we're talking about here. That's a risk that we all should know about by now. It's called a run on the bank, and occasionally there are bank runs where people just all at one time go and try and get their money out, and it's not easy for a bank to handle that, and so oftentimes they'll close their doors.
And that's concerning to me still, too, because I've heard out there from experts and banking people that if there was a run on the bank at the FDIC level, we don't have the funds to cover nearly the deposits. If it was a major run of and multiple banks at one time. So I'm like, well, okay, I need to at least make sure I have some cash on hand then. But now I'm hearing, but no, that's not yours either.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Now, if you want to see a run on the bank, pull out It's a Wonderful Life. Mm-hmm. And watch that, which is essentially about a bank run against Jimmy Stewart and his savings and loan that he had. And you'll see that. But that worked out. And important lessons from the whole thing with Silicon Valley Bank. Number one, your money is really their IOU to you. Mm-hmm. Number two, the FDIC did step in and make depositors whole. But this is not what we're talking about today, as you pointed out, when we say that what you think your money is not your money. And no, I'm not over-spiritualizing things. Oh, it's not my money, it's God's money. You know, that's true, too. We're just stewards of it. But
well, you know, it fits with what we talked about on the show before, that whole economic World Economic Forum stuff. You'll own nothing to be happy. And now if I don't own the money in my wallet, it's pretty much getting to that point.
Yeah, but I'm not happy about that. We'll talk about it. This may be part of a grand, larger scheme to really hurt us. You know, speaking of money, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, you can invest it. And here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. Now, if you can keep any of your money and the government doesn't take all of it, then you can do things like pick your cell phone company and so forth. But what happens when the government says that your money is their money? And we're not talking central bank digital currency. We've talked about that previously. We'll talk about it again on the program. But you won't want to miss a second of what we're talking about here. This could make the difference between seeing your money confiscated or having funds to care for your family and others. And for those who think Trump's going to solve everything, I hope they're right. Yeah. I hope he gets the power and the ability to do that. But there's already a serious pushback on many of his reforms, and the deep state is getting sneaky. Mike,
yeah, this was a DOJ precedent, right? So this was before Trump was officially inaugurated, but it was the Department of Justice that came up with this ruling that looks like they were, I don't think you need to be a lawyer to come up with this stuff. I think someone just said, this feels right to me, so this is going to be the law now.
Yeah, well, it's in the case. It's CS Lawn and Landscape Plaintiff versus U.S. Department of Labor. And as I shared by way of background before, bottom line is the Department of Labor studies this guy, says he's renting against zoning ordinances, and we're going to take $50,000 from it, or $55,000, I think it was, and we're going to step in. And then does he get his day in court? No. They internally review it. They become the investigator, so it's like the police force. Then they bring it to the district attorney, which is them also, and then they present their case before a judge, which is them also, and then they say, you owe $50,000. He said, wait a minute. I want to have my day in court. You can't take my property without due process, according to this little handy thing called the Constitution. You can't deprive me of property mm-hmm. without proper due process. And they came back and said, we don't have to do that. It's not property.
So that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness and property ownership no longer applies.
Yeah. Well, you'll own nothing and be happy. Yeah. Again,
you're working on that still.
That's what they're worried. Yeah. So Reason Magazine says, the government says money isn't property, so it can take yours. Now, do you think of cash as your property?
I feel like when it's in my possession that I own it, yes.
Yeah. But they're claiming you don't own it and it's not property.
Yeah.
To me, it's property. Why is money not property?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like we're quickly headed on that socialist path. If all of a sudden I can't control my money, I don't own my money, I own nothing.
It sounds like
they will tell me.
Fancy lawyers trying to steal money is what it mm-hmm. sounds like to me. Oh, money's not property. You know, where are you coming up with that? Well, we're going to talk about everywhere they're coming up with this. It's pretty obvious in the ruling, and it's also pretty stupid. All right, so Mike, we'll talk about why your money is not your property right after this break and find a solution.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're discussing an article that was in Reason Magazine. It was dated January 31st. The government says money isn't property, so it can take yours. We were talking about that. Mike, you feel like the money in your wallet's yours?
I do, although with one exception, if my wife finds about it, I think she thinks it's hers.
Okay, what's hers is, what's mine is hers, and what's hers
is hers.
That's
the way it works. Yeah.
No, and you know, that works both ways. I hear women saying similar things.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, it's not yours. It belongs to your family, right? That's the way we perceive
absolutely.
It. Or it belongs to the kingdom of God, we perceive it. But I don't think it belongs to the government, especially if
definitely
I've already
not
paid my taxes, right?
Exactly.
But this article, I mean, I'm surprised it's not gotten more play. Let me read.
They probably don't want it to get more play. I mean, unfortunately, the media is not reporting on what's happening out there. And when you look at this, this is one of those things that I think listeners of our audience here, this is shocking, and it literally sets up, we need to have some other solutions, which I know we'll get to later.
Yeah, we do have some good solutions, but this is a new one. I'm reading the article. U.S. Department of Justice argued that confiscating $50,000 from a small business did not infringe the business right to private property because money is not property. Money is not necessarily property for constitutional purposes, government's brief declared, putting the very idea of property in scare quotes. Money is not property. Reading at my desk, I practically fell out of my chair. The DOJ gave three rationales for the argument, all packed into a doorstopper of a footnote. One, the government creates money, so you can't own it. Two, the government can tax your money, so you don't own it. And three, the Constitution allows the government to spend money for the general welfare, presumably.
Give me those three. Say those three again.
Oh, we'll walk through them. Let's actually get into the case. And I've got the footnote. Okay. It's on page 9 of this ruling from the Justice Department. And I'll read. I've highlighted it here. It says, but in any event, money is not necessarily property for constitutional purposes. Money is created by the federal government.
Well, we've heard that before.
Does the federal government actually create money? I want to talk about that. But let me keep going. And the federal government is likewise empowered to take money through, for example, taxes. And thinking of money as property would also make little sense in light of the spending and property clauses. Since the early days of the Republic, Congress's ability to spend money was thought to flow from its powers to provide for the general welfare. Well, I'm not certain Congress's spending of money is for the general welfare. Seems like it's making a few people rich and the rest of us poor. But anyway, let's get into this. I want to walk through that. Now, I am not a lawyer, but I do have common sense, and I can read English. And so I want to tell you how stupid I think their far-fetched, specious argument really is. They say, number one, money is not property. Why? Because Congress created it.
Hmm.
They use this logic. Congress creates money because they created it. They have control over its use. Now, really? Seriously?
Well, we did hear Paulson say they just print money out of there, right? So I guess in some sense they're doing that?
Yeah, it was Jerome Powell and Ben Trump Bernanke Powell, and Hank Paulson was Treasury Secretary. But do we have that? Let's play that clip from the Federal Reserve Chairman where they're claiming to create money.
You simply flooded the system with money.
Yes, we did.
So to lend to a bank, we simply use the computer to mark up the size of the account that they have with the Fed. So it's much more akin, although not exactly the same, but it's much more akin to printing money than it is to borrowing.
You've been printing money.
Well, effectively.
Where does it come from? Do you just print it?
We print it digitally. So we as a central bank, we have the ability to create money digitally.
Flooding the system with money.
Yes, exactly.
And there's no end to your ability to do that.
There is no end to our ability to do that.
So they basically said, we create money digitally.
Mm-hmm.
They're making it up out of thin air.
Yep.
And there's no end to their ability to do that.
And that's pretty nice if you can do that.
Yeah.
But it hurts us, right? Because as they keep doing that, then what happens to the dollars that I do think I own in my pocket? They're worth less and less as well.
So the question is, are they really genuinely creating money? As a side note, the Constitution doesn't actually allow the government to create money. Instead, the Congress has the power to coin money. It doesn't say they can create money. They can coin money.
And what can they coin
money
that out of?
Well, they coined it out of gold and
silver.
I was
hoping you'd say that.
Yeah. So they can't create money. God creates money.
Mm-hmm.
God created money. When two neutron stars collide, that creates money. That's what our friend Jason says. Yep. You find it, you dig it out of the ground. That's God created. They don't even create the trees from which the money is printed, you know, right, on that paper. They don't create money. So I think that's a false argument. And yes, they have the power to coin money, but our monetary system has gone away from what used to be gold and silver to only paper, and even worse than that, ones and zeros on a computer that they create digitally.
Mm-hmm.
Is that real?
Good question. I mean, that seems to be the current trend. I mean, even the Bitcoins and all that, they're just creating things in thin air right now. It's not something I'm personally comfortable with yet, although I wish I would have bought some of that and experienced the investment upside of a Bitcoin.
So. I would have too. You know, it's a common agreement. Mm-hmm. It's a common agreement. If we commonly agree that this is worth $20 in purchasing power in today's terms, it's worth $20, right? Yeah. That's a common agreement. But originally, what the government said is that the Congress could coin money. And when the government claims that we made it, so we own it, well, that's ridiculous. Nobody's going to want to have money, spend money. I won't take a $20 bill for my book, Pirate Money, if I know the government can take the $20 bill away from me. Right. If this argument holds up, the economy crashes because nobody will be willing to use a dollar as a medium exchange.
It sounds like we're getting back into that according to plan book that you wrote. Are they purposely trying to destroy it?
Well, they want us to own nothing by the year 2030. That's the World Economic Forum. So let me just draw a comparison here. 100 years ago, you could have this $20 bill or this $20 gold piece. And this $20 bill says right on the face of it, redeemable in lawful money of the United States at the United States Treasury or the bank of issue. These were worth identically the same thing. You could take this, and it says right here, we'll pay to the bearer on demand $20, and this was legally $20.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1 ounce of gold, and it was a $20 gold piece.
But that paper money you had there at that time represented gold that was actually in the bank.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah, it was payable at the Treasury or at the bank of issue. So I could take this to St. Louis, the Federal Reserve Bank, show up with this and walk out with this.
So while they were printing that piece of paper, they weren't making money. They had the gold there that was already created.
Correct. The gold was created by God, and it was coined into money by the United States government, and then they were readily exchanged. So I'm going to call this Justice Department first point busted. They did not create money. They created pieces of paper that could be exchanged for money. And therefore, real money, I believe, is property. This is real money. And yes, the government has the authority to take taxes, to wage taxes and levy taxes. And when they do, they take money. I get that. And they spell that out in a footnote as their second argument as to why money is not property. It says, and the federal government is likewise empowered to take money through, for example, taxes, but not every tax is deprivation of property under the due process clause of a taking of property. So they say,
do they take my money or am I paying my taxes?
Well, now that you've got right to the point, legally in the United States, we have a voluntary tax system. Now, before everybody says, oh, voluntary, yeah. I'm not choosing not to do it. That's not what they mean when they say it's a voluntary tax system. It means that you can pay your taxes. They're not taken from you. Now, it seems like they're taken because they do withholding. So they just hold it aside in a reserve here until you settle up your taxes, and then you settle up. But technically, they're not taking in taxes. So, you know, again, that's an argument that I call just busted, because taxation, there's a difference between you pass a tax for everybody and a group from DOL shows up at your house and says, hey, you got somebody renting over here in a place that's not zoned for renting, therefore we're going to take your money. I see those as entirely different things.
I'm with you. So we got two strikes out of three right now.
Yeah, that's completely busted. And the logic is completely flawed. All right, so reason number two is busted. So in the Twilight Zone brief the Justice Department filed, They argue that Congress can spend money, and boy, can they spend money.
No, they've been very good at that.
Yeah, that's
so
it. What,
we're learning every day they're saving billions of dollars. As I see Elon Musk working his AI machines and his geniuses there just going through numbers.
Finding it's money that they're spending.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, did you see that one where Lee Zeldin, I think it is, going into the EPA, he says, before Biden left office, he threw off $20 billion of gold bars.
Yeah, like the Titanic going off the Titanic. Yeah,
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, so there's no way that Biden administration was looking out after our dollars before he left office. It was like, you know what it was like? It was like the wicked steward in the Bible.
Mm.
When he finds out that his master is going to fire him, and so he starts throwing around the master's money. Well, who's the master in our government supposed to be?
Well, I hope it'd be us.
We the people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The president is supposed to be a servant of the people.
Yeah.
The Congress serve the people. You know, it's we the people in order to form a more perfect union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the Constitution, in the Declaration, the notion is absolutely clear that we the people, here it is in the preamble, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Okay, in that process of we the people, we did say that the Congress has the power to dispose of property belonging to the United States. So we're trusting them as our steward to take care of that property. That makes sense, right?
Yeah. Well, they've been disposing a lot of our money anyhow.
Yeah. Well, then they go on and say, and they're very good at that.
Yeah.
They're very good at spending, and they haven't really disposed of a lot of property, although Doge may be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very good at spending. And so they basically say that because we're allowed to spend money and separately, we are able to tax money and dispose of property. This, if they can spend money and dispose of property, and we gave them two separate rights, they say they must be separate things. Therefore, money can't be property. Otherwise, they could dispose of the $20 bills in spending, and by doing so, they wouldn't even need a spending permission. They just need the disposal of property. Well, now that's a really stupid argument. That means this isn't property because they're able to spend money? That makes no sense to me.
I don't know where they get these judges. Well, I guess I do, but they're surely not setting things up for we the people.
Yeah, the good news is it's not a final court ruling. It's just a court brief from the Justice Department, but it's the Justice Department. Pam Bondi, pay attention. This is a place you can step in and stop this nonsense before it goes any further. This is a cancer in our Justice Department and money system. All right, we're going to talk about this and solutions right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're talking with Mike Carter, and we're talking about this argument the Justice Department's made that says because they can spend money and we're authorized in the Constitution to do that, and because they can dispose of property and they were authorized to do that, that it means that they must be two separate things. Your money is not your property, and therefore the government owns it, and they created it, and all this nonsense. So that gives them permission just to take whatever you've got. Now, Mike, you've got a son-in-law, right?
Yes.
All right. What if you gave your son-in-law permission? You said, hey, see this, all this stuff over there? Put it in a garage sale or put it on eBay, you know, and I want you to sell that for me and either bring me the proceeds and keep a piece of it or whatever. You give him permission to sell property.
Okay.
Can you imagine doing that?
Yeah, I do that. I could definitely see that.
Okay.
I'd probably just give him the stuff and then he could figure out whatever he wants. But yes, let's assume I'm doing that.
Assume you're doing that. So does that also give him the right to raid your wallet and take your money?
That would be a stretch. As much as I like him, would be a stretch.
Yeah. And so would he just say, well, he said I could sell his stuff over here, so I have right to take everything as well. That's essentially what the Justice Department was claiming, because we gave Congress permission to sell stuff that belongs to we the people. that they have a right to take our money anytime they want to.
So let's say this becomes the standard precedent. What does life look like for us if that's the case?
Well, it's very scary, and it's where the government was headed when this whole notion of central bank digital currency, which we haven't even got into. This is without CBDC. They think they own everything that we've got and can take it away from us. They tell us that by the year 2030, we'll own nothing, and we're going to be happy about that. Remember that creepy voice video that we put in Economic War Room? All right.
It's like Hollywood reinvented the way this whole thing is happening.
All right. Walk through these 10 points, predictions for the year 2030, and see if you're comfortable with any of them. Let's roll that clip with the creepy voice.
8 predictions for the world in 2030. You'll own nothing, and you'll be happy. Whatever you want, you'll rent, and it'll be delivered by drone. The US won't be the world's leading superpower. A handful of countries will dominate. You won't die waiting for an organ donor. We won't transplant organs, we'll print new ones instead. You'll eat much less meat. An occasional treat, not a staple, for the good of the environment and our health. 1 billion people will be displaced by climate change. We'll have to do a better job at welcoming and integrating refugees. Polluters will have to pay to emit carbon dioxide. There will be a global price on carbon. This will help make fossil fuels history. You could be preparing to go to Mars. Scientists will have worked out how to keep you healthy in space, the start of the journey to find alien life. Western values will have been tested to the breaking point. Checks and balances that underpin our democracies must not be forgotten.
Yay, all right, so Mike, what of those 10 predictions do you like? Which ones of them sound good?
Well, none of them sound good to me. They lost me. You'll eat no meat and be happy. I don't know. Maybe if there's some technology where you could create organs that was weird and worked and was not like
some kind of robotic thing that takes
over my body. But none of that sounds good to me. Amazon delivering, I'm okay with that. But everything else.
Going to Mars, I can see that. Everything's going to be so terrible here. I got to get out of here. Take me to Mars.
I guess that's what gets you to want to go to Mars, because when I look at Mars, I'm still kind of mystified by, why do I want to live in Mars?
Yeah, well, that means that. How bad is it going to be here?
Yeah.
All right. No, Elon says we'll probably have 1 million people on Mars by the mid-century, which would be powerful. But all right, nothing in that sounds really good to me. I'm not excited. It's like, wow. Where are the flying cars? Mm-hmm. Where is the eat everything I want to and not gain weight? Mm-hmm. Where is, you know, all these things? At first, when they said by the year 2030 you'll own nothing and be happy, I thought the rapture's come.
I don't need to own
anything. No, apparently not, because they're talking about printing fake organs and putting them in my body. I don't want any of that, really. Yeah. I mean, some of it's not as bad as the other. I found this article on the World Economic Forum website because I wanted to do a deep dive. Is this really true, or is that a parody that they created? It is not a parody. It is literally true. World Economic Forum website says, welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better. This is November 12, 2016.
And written by the World Economic Forum. So it's from their narrative for sure.
Yep. And it was put out right before Trump, right when Trump won his first term of presidency. This is where we were going to be if Hillary Clinton had been elected. I have no doubt. It says, welcome to the year 2030. Welcome to my city, or should I say our city. I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliances or any clothes. Wait, what?
I'm not wearing your clothes, just FYI.
Oh, wait, I went to maybe they made it a nudist colony, but y'all, we're going to share clothes. That's what it is. You read down it, and they say, when AI and robots took over so much of our work, we suddenly had time to eat well, sleep well, and spend time with other people. Now, how we don't have any money. How are we getting good food?
Somebody will be determining what's good food and what you're able to eat. And that's why I constantly talk. I'm going to digress just for a second here about having my Texas gold card, because I want to be able to pull that out and get the steak when I want it.
That's the point. If it's not your money, you can't buy with it what you want to. That's what central bank digital currency was designed to do, which we'll talk about in a second. But now they're even saying the money in your wallet's not yours. Whoa, Mike, you're in it, In-N-Out Burger here, and you're about to buy a cheeseburger. I'm sorry, we're watching you. If you will instead get a salad, not that In-N-Out sells salads, if you'll instead get a salad, we'll let you spend our money. But if you're going to get that cheeseburger, I'm sorry, I have to take your dollars away.
Yeah.
That's what you said. What's it going to be like?
Nothing about that's making me happy.
No, no. And it goes on. It says, this is interesting. It says, my biggest concern is all the people who do not live in our city, those we lost on the way, those who decided that became too much, all this technology, those who felt obsolete and useless when robots and AI took over big parts of our jobs, those who got upset with the political system and turned against it. This is written to Trump supporters, no question. They live different kinds of lives outside the city. Some have formed little self-supplying communities. Others just stayed in the empty and abandoned houses. I'm sorry, I'm staying with them.
I'm going to be happier.
I'll be Amish and I'll be happier, right? Once in a while, I get annoyed about the fact that I have no real privacy, nowhere I can go and not be registered. I know that somehow where everything I do, think, and dream of is recorded, I just hope that nobody will use it against me. In their own words, on their own website, in an article that was published almost a decade ago.
Designed to attract people. That's the scary part. There's a mindset out there of believers that think this would be utopia.
Yeah. No, it's the same kind of people. You remember the movie Independence Day?
Yeah.
Independence Day, the very movie, and the big UFO hovers over the city and people go to the rooftops and worship the UFO until they get blasted.
Yeah.
That's where we're headed, is the people who want to adopt this. The creators of central bank digital currency are wanting to do this with technology. Instead of the paper bills, they want to do it with technology. And they say it's not your money. Up front, they tell you that. You just have a use license. The problem here is that they say they can take it away at will or limit how you can use it. And with CBDC, they can track it and you. We've shown a great clip of the head of the Bank for International Settlements who admits that CBDC would give the government absolute control. And he says the technology to enforce it. Can you roll the 20-second clip?
All our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash.
Stop.
And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that.
All right, stop it right there. What he just said is it's a central bank liability, just like the liability to you when you put cash in the bank. Mm-hmm. We talked about that earlier. And the second thing he says is we'll have absolute control on the use of it. It will be different than a $100 bill because we can track everything and we will have the technology to enforce it.
That's where it all makes sense. I mean, this is a DOJ under Biden. The DOJ should be nonpartisan. But you see now why there's this illogical thought process of you don't own your money. But how that is the ultimate setup to say, yeah, you don't own your money. We're taking that. Oh, and here's CBDC.
And if you don't own your money, you don't own anything, mm-hmm. which is the goal of the World Economic Forum. So we have President Trump, and he has an executive order stopping CBDC as long as he's president, unless Congress passes it and overrides his veto. So we have a short reprieve. And the courts have not yet confirmed the Justice Department's screwy notion that money is not property. But Attorney General Bondi, get in there and stop it now. I'm hopeful that she will. I don't want this. I want economic freedom.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Danny Griego?
Freedom. Yes, let's get it.
Yeah.
We need that theme song up and ready. We need a button, Russell, we can just push for the freedom theme song to kick in.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we have David Webb's great taking. Basically, under many states' laws, it appears that in the event of a financial upheaval, even your stocks and bonds can be taken for the good of the system, with the total value of all the derivatives now is over $1 quadrillion. A quadrillion, you know, we talk trillions in our debt, but the amount of derivatives in the market is over $1 quadrillion. So if there's some hiccup or mess that happens in that, literally they take your stocks and your bonds.
Yeah, and we've talked before in the NSIC how, you know, you might think you own stocks, but you don't necessarily really own those stocks. They're kind of pooled, and some of those are floating out there. So you don't, even now with our current system, settlement system, there's not necessarily a one-for-one of those stocks.
Well, and the good news is, though, David Webb is a friend of Pirate Money Radio, and he's working on a state-by-state fix for that, going to the Uniform Commercial Code. So we are working on this for you. Economic War Room, Pirate Money Radio, our goal is to help preserve your liberty, security, and values. Money is your property. It's not the government's property, and we're standing up for that. Speaking of state-by-state efforts, Mike, I know we're going to have to cover this more after the break, but you brought it up earlier. I mean, I can't keep this out. This is what you think, live, breathe, talk about all the time, gold and silver as money. Just give us a tease.
It's happening. You know, we're seeing great leadership in Florida, Texas, and Utah. I don't know who's going to be first within that, but we've got tremendous legislation happening. And we're seeing even the states that are just kind of dipping their toe in the water say, hey, we need to at least make gold and silver legal tender.
Yeah, we absolutely do. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll be talking about freedom, economic freedom, and how what you're working on, Article 1, Section 10, constitutional currency, can protect all of us and make money property again for God's purpose.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, that's the great Danny Griego singing that song, Freedom, which is phenomenal. And it's our opportunity to talk about economic freedom. Mike, you just teased us at the beginning about the Article 1, Section 10 idea. We cover it in the book Pirate Money. I've been dreaming of this since I was a 10-year-old kid when Nixon took us off the gold standard. We've been working on it for at least a decade. Great people went before us, like Edwin Vieira and so forth, and Ron Paul, and said, this is the ultimate. This is what we do. Glenn Beck said, this is the holy grail of monetary solutions. And Mike, you're working with good men and women across the country to bring this to reality. Explain how it works, and then please tell us how it's progressing.
Yeah. Again, everybody, as you hear this message, it's so important right now. Now is the time with the current administration, with the current movement that's happening out there, and with what we just heard on this show about your money is not your money, to have solutions out there. And the ability of what's in Article 1, Section 10, to take part of what you make, put in a bullion depository, usually run by the state, and then be able to transact gold and silver anywhere you can spend a MasterCard or a debit card out there, or eventually be able to transact in gold and silver peer-to-peer if a retailer decides they want to take a payment in gold and silver. The beautiful part of this, the states that we're working with, we're seeing put in legislation for privacy rights. We're seeing that this is money that you're going to own. It's never loaned out. If you put the money and you buy gold in the depository, that gold is yours sitting in the vault. It's not fractionalized or anything like that. It's always yours, and it's there for your ready money to be able to spend.
And it was created by God. It was not created by government. Therefore, they can't just take it from you. All right, we did an explainer video that we've just produced. It's very early, rough draft, first time, but I think we should unveil that now.
Let's do it.
100 years ago, your great-grandfather decided not to buy a new car, but instead left you that $400 as an inheritance. He had a decision to make. He could have left you 20 $20 bills, or he could leave 20 $20 gold coins. Back then, they were worth exactly the same. Which one would you hope to get? Today, those gold coins would be worth over $50,000, enough to buy a new car, while the paper bills would still be just $400, barely enough for a set of tires. A gold coin back then could buy a nice man's suit. Today, it still can. Paper money has not kept up. So, how do we fix this? We can return to a gold and silver-backed system using modern technology. States already have the right to do this. It is found in Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, allows states to use gold and silver as legal tender. Texas, for example, already has a bullion depository, and with legislation, it could make gold and silver transactional legal tender, aka currency. Other states can too. Here's how it could work. 1. Citizens open accounts at state-authorized depositories and convert dollars into gold or silver. 2. The metal is stored securely, and electronic systems, like existing debit card technology, enables fast, seamless, and secure transactions. 3. Buyers and sellers can trade goods and services using gold and silver, just like using dollars. This system is secure, familiar, and provides everyone, yes, not just the wealthy, a hedge against inflation. It allows people to save, spend, and protect their money's value in real time. Gold and silver as functional money create honest economic justice, offering another way to pay while safeguarding against inflation. For more information on how to support this in your state, visit transactionalgold.com. Let's work together to restore financial stability and fairness for everyone.
Yeah. And Mike, do people want this?
They do. And what stood out, just watching that short segment there, you don't need to be rich to own gold. You know, people typically think, well, I can't afford an old gold. It's not, what do I do with it? How do I sell it? And so forth. But now we have a system we're talking about where you can buy as little as 10 cents worth of gold or $10 worth of gold every paycheck. And you start saving up and you have some gold set aside in a ready money account. Maybe you don't want to spend that, but if you need to, and your car breaks down, you need to get to work. I didn't want to spend my gold, but I at least that's what I've got. It's transactional. Boom, I can do it. I get my car fixed. I get to work. But most importantly, that money is keeping a steady store of value. So as the government continues to print money or the global economy continues to go down this debt trap, you've got something that you physically own, that's your property, that can't be taken away from you. That's a stable store of value.
And you can meet your financial needs. You won't own nothing because you'll be able to buy something with your gold.
Yeah.
All right, Proposition 7 on the Texas ballot. Texas legislature should establish authority within the state Texas State Comptroller's Office to administer access to gold and silver through the Texas Bullion Depository for use as legal tender, not just, you know, so you can stick it in a shoebox or stick it in the ground or whatever. And that passed 76.5% to 23.5% yes. 1.6 million Texans voted for it, but it's not just Texas, Mike, other states.
No, it's not, but let's even go back to Texas. Representative Mark DeRazzo's got a bill in the House. I think he's got over 40 authors, co-authors, bipartisan support behind this. That's significant. Utah just passed legislation that allows the state to be able to pay their employees and vendors in gold and silver now. It's functionally recognizing gold and silver as currency, as legal tender. And these were unanimous, out of committee unanimously and so forth. We saw in North Dakota, it got turned down by a committee by the financial institutions group that came in. Committee said, we're not ready to take this step. Legislator, Representative Sue Ann Olson called us. We talked to her about what was going on. She gets on the floor the next day because in North Dakota, if most legislative bodies have, you have to go through a committee first, and the committee approves it, goes for a vote. In North Dakota, it's a little bit different. They got their own state bank, but they also have a unique thing that every bill gets to be heard on the floor. She does her three-minute talk. A couple other people rally behind that. And we watch the board change, green versus red, and the board just lights up green, 61 to 30. We need to study this more. We need to understand how to do this. That's the type of movement and momentum we're seeing happening. Florida, we've been involved in talking extensively with all types of leadership there, with a study report they're doing to say, how do we make this happen now? And we've got Oklahoma. You were just talking to the team there last week, moving very aggressively. Arkansas, Kansas.
Yeah, bipartisan. I mean, it's winning bipartisan unanimously in the Oklahoma House. It won unanimously in the Utah legislation, unanimously in the House committee, and then in the House. So it's completely bipartisan. Now, they had a leg up because they'd done this major study. Mm-hmm. That I got to participate in the working group. I just interviewed Marla Oakes and Ken Ivory from Utah. And their study, here are the conclusions. The state treasurer's recommendations outline how the state could implement a goal-based transactional platform, just like you described. These steps help ensure the system security, transparency, and accessibility. Additionally, the constitutional and legal foundation addressed by the work group provides a strong basis for gold as legal money, once again, eliminating federal capital gains taxes on gold transactions. So this is
it's big, but I mean, that study committee was great thought leaders, not only yourself, Kevin, but run through some of the people that were on that committee.
Well, there was Randy Quarles, a former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. There was a former senior vice president of Citigroup. There was the head of the Utah Bankers Association. There was precious metal people. There was Mike Lee, the senator there. There was the governor's office represented there, the attorney general's office. And by the way, I want to mention this. I don't want to forget it. The governor's office here in Texas just asked at the Texas Public Policy Foundation's event. They had their annual event. Governor Abbott came in and spoke, and one of our friends, George Pond, raises his hand. I have a question for you. And essentially, our friend James Dickey said, hey, Kevin, George just asked if they'd pass your bill. If they passed it, would the governor sign it? And he said, absolutely.
Yeah, that's huge. And I'm not even sure he knows what Florida's doing right now. So there's a little friendly competition between those two. I think we've got a good shot at seeing it happening in Florida, in Texas, but it might be Arkansas or somebody else.
Tennessee.
Tennessee, New Hampshire's working things.
Kansas.
I mean, I hate to even start listing because there's so many I'm like, I can't keep up with. And some are saying, hey, Wyoming the other day, well, we're going to do a report on how we can set this up. We're going to hold some money in this is our state fund for rainy day fund. So those are all things that
Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi. I mean,
and go back though
South
to that,
Carolina,
to
South that, Dakota, North Dakota.
That precious metals team that you were a part of, and even the research stuff that's being done in Florida right now. These are really smart, credible people. So you know, if you're in your car right now and you're hearing this radio, you're like, is this really possible? Yeah, this is not tinfoil hat. This is real. It's in our Constitution. The technology is there to do it today, and it can happen.
Thomas Honig, a former Open Market Committee member of the Federal Reserve, former president of a Federal Reserve Bank in Kansas City. This guy's a really smart guy, and they went to him and said, now, do you think that we could do this in Utah? They just asked him, and he said, not only did he think that they could do it, he thinks it's a good idea, and people ought to have the choice. And then he went on to say, the way Washington is spending money. And well, remember, the opening of this, we talked about Washington spends money, therefore they claim your money is their money. He's saying the way Washington spends money, you need to have citizens have a right to have their money that they can't just take. And that's what we're talking about. Can you imagine being paid in gold and silver, paying your employees in gold and silver, paying your suppliers in gold and silver, writing contracts in gold and silver, a convenient gold and silver-based ecosystem that's completely legal and completely optional, and it's not that complicated. It is just...
It's another way to pay.
Another way to
natural pay. Hedge against inflation. This is going to happen. It's a reality, but we need grassroots support. And if you're hearing this and you don't know where your state's at, go to transactionalgold.com for more information there. And then make sure you call your state legislators and say, hey, I want to figure out how we can make this happen in our state.
Yeah. Well, what we've been asking people to do is if you want more information, learn about the book. Check out PirateMoneyBook.com. A lot of people have been buying copies and sending them to their legislator. Yeah. I'm getting calls from people. Somebody sent me your book. I think it's really interesting. If you have questions, if you have comments, you can reach us at AFR@PirateMoneyRadio.com. That's AFR@PirateMoneyRadio.com. And you should be praying about this. Pray for America to return to God's principles. Listen wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, etc. People need to hear this message. It's Pirate Money Radio. Till next week, it's Kevin Freeman.